Edgar said to the interviewer he was convinced that the thing out there wasn't a vault at
all. I know what he thought.
Dr. Eggers didn't think it was designed to keep things out.
I know what
he thought. It was designed to keep something in.
Do you even understand the difficulty trying to keep a base like Fathom at the bottom of the ocean from killing everyone in it on a daily basis?
Oh my God.
Everyone hold on to something.
I think whatever is on the other side of that door out there, it's not friendly. I think it's trying to get out. That, my friend, is a dire combination.
That's a bad sign.
Get out of the door!
It's spreading like some kind of technological contagion. We can either stop it here or watch the world burn.
Fathom, the first season of Derelict. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. Or learn more at derelictpodcast.com.
We want to tell you about a show we think you'll love. Derelict is an immersive sci-fi horror podcast. The story begins at the bottom of Earth's ocean, where an ancient artifact resembling a giant door has just been found. The galaxy's most powerful corporation has built a massive secret laboratory around the door, intending to unlock the secrets of the artifact and discover what lies inside. But some mysteries should remain buried, and some doors should never be opened. The second season, currently releasing, picks up several years after the events of the first, from fathoms below Earth's ocean to the depths of space. If you're a fan of movies like Alien, the works of H.P. Lovecraft, or games like Deep Space and BioShock, you'll love Derelict. Unravel the mystery and subscribe to Derelict. That's D-E-R-E-L-I-C-T, wherever you listen to podcasts. And after the episode, stay tuned to hear the trailer.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey guys, thank you for tuning in for this episode of 13. Before we get started, we want to shout out our new patrons, Jessica Bramlett, Asmund Eidslot, and Greg Camden. Thank you guys for joining the pod fam. We're so happy to have you there. And if you're interested in things like ad-free episodes, an extra story each month, behind-the-scenes content, exclusive merch, or just like, I don't know, hanging out with us, then you should check out our Patreon. Our tiers start at just $1 a month, and there are different perks for each. Whether you feel like an original ghoul, a witch mother, or something in between, just check out our show notes to learn more. This month's second episode is Edge of Nowhere by Mel Harlan, narrated by me, Brooke Jeanette. Are you ready? Sit back, turn down the lights, and now, on with the show. The red tent's border faded into the blue twilight, and the palmettos lining the backyard waved, beckoning. If something appeared out of their depths, at least my dad would be happy.
Maybe you'll even see a coyote.
Dad looked elated at the prospect of glimpsing what had eaten all 19 of our neighbor's cats and half of their chickens, crushing the wire fence surrounding them. A lone rooster remained, wailing at all times of the night. I had never camped before. A light sweat coated my arms, and I smacked away the first mosquito. My stomach remained in knots like it had been all week. The other two girls would be arriving soon. Dad asked if I wanted to change.
"What do you mean?"
I replied, my voice too sharp. Dad glanced down at my at-home uniform of short overalls covering a Jimmy Buffett t-shirt that I'd stolen from him, topped off with my gardening sneakers, and I realized he was referring to my clothes. Inside the house, there was the unblemished white pair of Keds that he had bought me. "They'll be here any minute," I said. I'd dress in those white shoes and pigtails if he had his way, and it would only make me that much more obvious. "You are going to have so much fun." Dad smiled wide in approval of his handiwork. The red tent sat proud and straight, even though it was his first time setting one up. I had hoped the tent would fall in on itself with a sigh of defeat. "I guess you're right," I said slowly. Dad looked up and smiled, welcoming my tormentors. The girls had arrived together, in the same car, since their moms were best friends too. And the car's headlights cast them in silhouette as they walked along the wraparound deck. As nimble as ballerinas, they carefully placed each step to avoid mucking their perfectly white Keds. I tucked one foot behind my ankle, balancing. Mary-Kate and Aubrey's hair shone in the dying light, blonde strands floating in the breeze, the brightest thing in the yard. Butterfly clips did their best to maintain the tresses, their hairstyles matching. They frowned at my dad's attempt at tenting, hand in hand, eyes hard. "Hey, Jamie," the girls said, staring at me with the intensity of every 10-year-old girl who knows exactly what the world is, already judging and shaping it for themselves. I clenched my lips shut.
"Welcome. We're glad to have you at the Newhouse Estate," my dad declared grandly, and I shrank. Of course, I hadn't told him exactly who he'd invited. He'd only try to fix it and make things worse. I'd find my own way to handle it. "Have you ever seen a yard like this, where you can camp right near the house?" Dad said, with a gesture to his great outdoors. "I wish I had something like this growing up, for me and my friends." I have never been to their houses, but our backyard was humongous. I loved it during the daytime when I searched for buried treasure among the falling leaves, pine cones, and heavy-limbed oaks. For long hours, I played under Dad's watchful gaze from the window, where his disappointment grew as I happily conjured grand and magical tales alone. Whenever I ventured near the edge, I could feel his eyes on me, hoping for me to go further. But I always turned back. If I was a true adventurer, I would be able to cross from the tamed and open area to where the yard turned overpowering and dark. The yard stretched long and deep with huge oaks and open grass, while the border was dense with palmettos. Once, these palms had reached all the way to the house, so the previous owner had built a wraparound deck to traverse the yard from their screened-in back porch. My parents had cleared most of the plants out before I was born. But the edge of nowhere felt close, even now. "Wow," Mary-Kate said flatly. Clearly, she hated my house and my yard and my dad. She didn't want to be here, and neither did Aubrey. When Dad had wanted me to go camping, I'd sarcastically mentioned Mary-Kate and Aubrey would be perfect. He'd promptly called their parents, who'd guilted them into hanging out with that girl from the middle of nowhere, where the brambles on the sides of the house were so thick you couldn't see the far-flung neighbors. "Mom said you would have snacks." Aubrey looked around like she was waiting for Go-Gurt, Gushers, or Squeezits to appear. Mary-Kate shared Aubrey's snacks at lunch. Her favorite Squeezit flavor was Mean Green Punch. Mary-Kate would drop the color pellet in the bottle and squeeze until the drink turned green. Dad laughed. "Of course, I'll be right back with those." He ran up the porch steps and into the house, the bright lights of the windows outlining him and casting long shadows across the lumpy ground. The known transformed before my eyes. The birdbath became an ominous shape. Wet grass stroked the sides of my feet,
and I imagined something dark and slick slithering across my bare toes. The night awakened. Cicadas hummed, bullfrogs croaked, and the rooster cried. Trees loomed, their branches becoming arms to reach out for me. It felt like the time Dad wheedled me into jet skiing on the lake. I had frantically clung to his back, and he laughed and told me that everything was fine, that I would find my adventurer's soul. But he still slowed so I could examine the mallard drifting on the water next to us. Then, something rose from the murky depths and snatched the duck. Only a few feathers remained. I never went jet skiing again, sure that next time, I would be eaten instead. "We have pizza bagels," I said, the offer and my unbidden hope for change rising within me. Maybe tonight wouldn't be like class, where Mary Kate would reach casually and slowly to place dead lizards in my hair. Where she would entice the class to play man of war, always selecting me to be the first victim to hold the ball and be hunted down. Where Aubrey's watchful gaze followed each comment, sizing me up in silent agreement. Maybe she wouldn't spread her opinion around, and when we went to Coral Palms High School next year, they wouldn't greet me with Mary Kate's signature welcome. But then, while my dad was out of earshot, Mary Kate pretended her hands were paws, making her customary snicking noises, and my chances disappeared. Gone the way whole families sometimes disappeared from your life with no explanation, as if they had been swallowed by the earth like sinkholes I had seen on the news. I wished the girls would vanish instead. "Why don't you go inside?" I flourished toward the tent, like Dad would when presenting an array of wines when he hosted. And I unzipped the flap for them. There were three sleeping bags, one red, one black, and mine, which Mary Kate snorted at. She deigned to sit on the black one, and Aubrey flopped down on mine, with the unapologetic cartoon rabbit on it. "I'm gonna go check on the snacks," I said. They rolled their eyes at me as I sealed them into the tent. I could stay outside, just for a little bit. Each step unsure, I walked toward the edge of the yard, under the remaining light from the house windows. In the corner were the remains of our garden. I had wanted it to be full of carnivorous plants, Venus flytraps especially. But Dad insisted we go with sunflowers, tomatoes, and a banana tree. It had been destroyed not long after, when something had rooted around in it, spurting tomato guts like ghastly red ink blots among the cedar plant bed. Maybe, somewhere past the perimeter of the trees, there were actually dragons or some other mystical creature I could bring home and show Dad that I'd done what he wanted. I could have unspecified, unwatched adventures. Anywhere but here. Something shook the fronds like claws against the sky. The tent glowed faintly with misshapen shadows, and I was grateful that the other girls had found the lantern. As I took hesitant steps backward, I released a nervous laugh and reached for the tent behind me, while my eyes searched the darkness. My hand finally slid across the tent and followed its shape until the zipper was beneath my fingertips. The wind picked up, tossing my hair into my face as I opened the tent. "What are you doing?" Mary Kate's face looked like an empty skull, as her spread fingers hovered over the semi-bright lantern, creating shadow puppets along the tent walls. The tent fabric reflected the light, and her thick, ropey blonde hair glinted the color of fresh blood. Aubrey's face scrunched at her tone. "We're out of pizza bagels," I said with a shrug, and I settled down onto my sleeping bag. "Snacks," Dad called. He set the offering into the middle of the tent. my favorite, an arrangement of carrots, hummus, and celery. Mary Kate offered a tight smile. Aubrey sniffed the plate like it was dangerous. "No s'mores?" Mary Kate asked. I'm sure they had pictured some sort of huge fire pit, with graham crackers and chocolate and marshmallows ready for roasting. I would turn them over and over, roasting past the traditional golden brown marshmallow. I preferred mine charred.
"Sorry, girls. It's too damp to start a fire this time of year. It will only create a lot of smoke."
Dad wiped his forehead with his sleeve, looking even warmer for having imagined a summertime fire.
"You all have fun."
He gave me a wink before zipping the tent closed behind him. "Don't let them see your teeth," I thought, and then chewed my lower lip as I tried to remember what my parents did when hosting their friends. I lifted the corner of the sleeping bag, placing it over my knees, and I settled behind it with my lips against the slick fabric. My breath was heavy and contained, echoing back at me like another presence.
"What are we going to do?"
Mary Kate feigned, looking around the tent.
"There's not even a TV in here."
Aubrey shook her head.
"What kind of person doesn't have a TV?"
I bit harder, my lips squirming to escape like when Mary Kate and Aubrey would chase me and hunt me down and make me play dead. It was their other favorite game, shoving me to the ground and forcing me to lie still as they poked me with their sticks. If I flinched, especially when they poked me in the face, then they would poke me harder, reminding me to lay still since I was dead.
"Let's tell scary stories."
Mary Kate plucked at my dad's well-used sleeping bag, ripping a hole wider and spilling the goose down.
"Only really scary ones."
Aubrey nodded, her pigtails swinging, and I noticed one was ever so slightly higher than the other, not up to Mary Kate's usual standards. I chewed my lip harder.
"It will be fun, unless you're scared."
Mary Kate pounced, sensing my hesitation.
"Yeah, are you?"
Aubrey said.
"Of course not. I don't get scared, especially not of the dark."
I gave myself mental applause. I sounded convincing. Lowering the sleeping bag, I took a carrot and dipped it in hummus, a huge crunch echoing in the tent.
"What's up, Doc?"
Mary Kate said. She looked at Aubrey and they shared a braying laugh. My mouth dried, but I managed to swallow. I set the rest of the carrot down on the plate while my tummy rumbled.
"Come on, Jamie, entertain us."
Mary Kate's face darkened as she turned off the lantern and shoved it behind her, out of reach.
"Make sure it's extra scary," Aubrey said.
Sweat stained my dad's shirt. Even my overalls were starting to stick to me. I kicked off the top of the sleeping bag, sighing. The night felt cooler in the dark, and I shivered. My imagination swirled while the rooster shrieked in the distance. If they wanted to be scared, I could make them scared. It was their turn to be afraid.
"Come on, Jamie,"
Aubrey said with a softer voice, and I clenched my fist at her new tone. She had never relented before. I pushed the hummus plate away, carrots scattering. Outside the tent, a sudden wind bayed through the trees, like an animal crying out for meat.
"There was once a witch who lived in a great and giant wood. She kept to herself, preferring her own company, despite the town nearby. Seeing her oddness and strangeness, the townspeople conspired to force her to leave her home. They came and destroyed her gardens, which she used for healing. But the witch remained. Then they came and they poisoned her well. She used the water from it to clean wounds. The witch still remained. Finally, the town came with torches to burn her house down. And so they did. But the witch remained."
A swift sound came near the tent, and a whoosh followed. disturbing the fabric encasing us. Aubrey gasped, and Mary Kate's head turned sharply, glowering at her, even in the dark. Left alone to her wiliness, the witch crafted a new home out of the trunk of a tree and waited for the moment that she knew was coming. And, sure enough, plague struck the villagers. Pus and boils and suffering grew. Mary Kate made an ick sound at Aubrey, sinking her further into the story. I heard their bodies shift as they drew themselves closer, but I heard no crinkling of leaves or croaking of bullfrogs or humming of the cicadas. In their time of desperation, they turned to the witch, to her strangeness and oddness that had once been a source of contempt. They knocked on her wooden door. I knocked against the ground 3 times. The witch heard their pleas. Mary Kate cackled, rubbing her arms, and Aubrey shifted uncomfortably. I smirked. "We need your help. All of our people are sick," the villagers said. The witch replied, "You have destroyed my gardens. I have no plants to make a salve." "Our people have gaping wounds of disease," the villagers said. The witch replied, "You have poisoned my well, and I have no clean water to cleanse your wounds." "Then will you not provide us shelter?" the villager asked. The witch replied, "You have burned down my home. I have no shelter to give you." The witch smiled, knowing that the villagers wrought their own ruin. She left them to die from their illness, traveling to another town. They say that the scratches of the villagers prying at her closed door still follow her. Something scraped along the sides of the tent, causing the walls to billow and turn, like branches were slowly twisting against the slick fabric. Mary Kate reached behind her and thumbed the lantern back on, dim light fighting the shadows encircling us.
"You call that a scary story?"
Mary Kate's laugh wobbled. Aubrey half laughed, looking around. I had found a new kind of ridicule, the kind closer to power. There was a crunch nearby, and a heavy thump followed. Their laughs cut off.
"I'm sure I just heard something," Mary Kate said.
"Go see for yourself," I said. "There's nothing out there. I thought you weren't scared."
Mary Kate's eyes lit on me.
"You're going first,"
she spat. And she gestured toward the thin flap of fabric separating us from the night.
"Then give me the lantern,"
I demanded, holding out my hand.
"No way."
Mary Kate yanked the lantern back towards herself. Aubrey looked around guiltily.
"I think we should stay here,"
she said, eyeing the lantern. Mary Kate shook her head, but this time, it was like she was on the other end of my stick, being nudged and nudged, and she couldn't back down. She didn't know how. I crawled out of the sleeping bag slowly, and with the lantern, Mary Kate stepped behind me. We crouched, avoiding the moving walls around us. Mary Kate glared at Aubrey, who silently shifted, the sleeping bag drooping around her. I reached for the zipper of the tent and slowly opened the flap, one metal tooth at a time. The world outside was deep, unending blackness. There was no returning to the house. Not now, not when Dad was waiting for morning and the news of how well tonight went. We ventured out. I led as Mary Kate and Aubrey's presence pushed me further from the safety of the tent. Our bare feet rustled the wet grass. The only light came from the lantern. The sky had hidden the moon from us. The night was warm, the wind coming and going, and the palmettos swaying and swaying and swaying against the tent. No, that was impossible.
My eyes pierced the darkness, trying to discern gray from the black. But I could feel the ground shaking, rhythmic and pulsing. And right behind the tent, there was a rumble, and then a groan, an unearthing, a crumble of rocks. Swelling from the depths of nowhere came a back, covered in upturned earth and thick with palmettos. A head followed with no eyes, but teeth. It unfurled to the treetops as its legs, like a buried chest of worms and many-legged insects and mushrooms, rose from the underground. Talons flashed as the unknown filled the backyard, its long tail swirling. For a moment, terror clutched my throat and begged for me to run. The unknown had found us, the edge of nowhere growing inside and out. It filled my empty stomach and the billowing tent and stretched into the long night ahead. And then, for the first time tonight, my heartbeat slowed. There was nothing left to fear. Mary Kate gasped. The lantern trembled and fell from her hand. She ran to the house and Aubrey followed. Their footsteps hit the ground like a heartbeat. I stayed planted. If fear in the past had taught me anything, to run was to draw its attention. Run, little wabbits. It followed them. The ground groaned and held its weight. Palmettos lined its back, shaking with each step. The girls leapt, their bare feet flashing as they raced to the patio. The thing lunged for their heels, nearly catching them. And the girls made it inside the screened patio. I pictured them, huddling in the dark, their blonde hair intertwining. It was their turn to play dead. The thing beyond the palmettos. No, that wasn't quite right, since it was the palmettos. Hulked back toward me, the promise of an easier meal. I felt its consideration as it sensed me. I raised my chin. I would have guessed it was intrigued. What was this little girl doing instead of running from it? I strode back to the tent and collected the carrots that tumbled off the plate Dad had left us. One of the carrots was tucked into the flap of my sleeping bag, the sleeping bag Aubrey was using, half of it missing. I returned with the full plate in hand to where the creature remained, its talons grounding it. I stepped closer, one cautious inch at a time. I pressed my mess of hair up to my forehead, my face stiff with its layer of sweat. I reached out a steady hand, and I offered it a carrot. It greedily accepted, its tongue wrapping around the offering, and I smiled. Without eyes on me, the soothing wave of exultation could enter my heart. Palmettos grew there. Within them, something ancient writhed and desired to be named. The dark trembled around us. Eventually, the sounds of the night returned, one at a time. The bullfrog croaked, the cicadas hummed, and the rooster cried. The blue light of morning came. I bid my new friend farewell, watching it settle back into the edge of nowhere. I followed, but no longer needed to enter. The wind tumbled through the palm fronds, tossing their leaves this way and that, reminding me of our secret. The tent had small slashes along its side, evidence something had scraped against it and all over it. Leaves had blown in overnight, and a small lizard curled atop a sleeping bag. Except for the lizard, the sleeping bags were empty. I peeled the oversized t-shirt away from my body. It rose and then fell, clinging to me. "Breakfast!" Dad yelled from the kitchen window. One carrot remained on the plate in my hands. I picked up the half-eaten carrot, turning it over, and I took a bite. The crunch echoed across the backyard as I briefly bared my teeth. Soon he would find the girls on the porch, still playing dead. What could they say but that they had had a real adventure? I had a feeling that next time we played Man of War, I would not be the first to run.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of 13. If you like what you heard, stop what you're doing and leave a 5-star rating and review wherever you listen to podcasts. This was Edge of Nowhere by Mel Harlan. Narrated by me, Brooke Jeanette. Editing and sound design by Brooke Jeanette. Additional assistance from Bridget Freeman and Ian Epperson. Our producer-level patrons are Rick Linville, Tattooed Fox, Rhiannon, Sean Geary, Anthony Diaz, Michael Vasquez, Amy Harper, Jackie Kay, Delta Tango, Chantel Payne, Nick, Emily Douglas, Stephanie Klinger, Jake R., and Abigail Perez. Thank you guys so much for your support. Check out the link in our show notes to learn more about joining us on Patreon. And check us out on social media. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok under Pod13. And you can join the Facebook group for 13 Podcasts. Just look for our logo. And you'll find links to all that in our show notes. If you'd like to submit a story to be performed on the show, or if you'd like to contact us about anything else, get in touch at info@13podcasts.com. You'll find submission guidelines and other info on our website, 13podcasts.com. You can find that in the show notes, too. Bridget Freeman is slowly unzipping your tent. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next month.